Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, the editor-in-chief of the magazine, Jason Pfeiffer, standing in a parking lot somewhere in L.A. Boy, earlier this week, Entrepreneur Live, lots of great stuff. We all missed it, so let's at least talk about it. Jason Pfeiffer, what did we all miss, brother?
Hey, man, I am standing in a parking lot. By the way, did I just say that I wandered to the furthest corner to make it as quiet as possible, and I found what it's called? There's literally a sign here. It says Smoker's Village, and it's two chairs and a table next to the dumpster.
Los Angeles.
So, sorry, smokers. Sorry, smokers.
Boy, man, this
is a lot. I mean, we're actually right. So we're talking. It's about 4 p.m. L.A. time during this. John Taffer of Bar Rescue is going to go on in about an hour. Really can't wait to see what he has to say. But we kicked the day off with, and I guess we could talk about this for the segment, I interviewed Foodstirs on stage. Foodstirs is a new baking company, 2 years old, three co-founders, one of which you've probably heard of, who is Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Oh, yeah.
And what was super interesting, and the first thing that kind of drew me into their story was, you think that every entrepreneur thinks that you get something hot and buzzy into your company, and you feel like that's all we need, right? We just get the sexy idea, the sexy something into the company. And here you've got a company with Sarah Michelle Gellar, who everybody knows, and that actually turns out to often be a challenge for them. So much so that she told us on stage that she has asked her co-founders at times, would it be better if I wasn't a co-founder? Because, you know, like, people will take meetings with them, but it turns out just because they want to meet Sarah Michelle.
Oh.
You know, people will want to work for them, but it turns out it's just because they want to meet Sarah Michelle, right? You have, they fling doors open, but sometimes not every door that opens is the right door.
Right, right, right. You know what's funny? I had lunch with Alan Alda after he wrote his new book, and, you know, it's like it took quite a few conversations because it's like, do you really want to interview him about your book, or do you just want to touch him and feel him and get close to from MASH?
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, no, I ended up doing a whole hour with him. He's a brilliant guy. And, you know, but I get it. There is a celebrity part of this whole thing that can really, you know, kind of throw a wrench in the monkey works. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know what that leaves open for me and you and others is if you can go and talk to someone about something that they're passionate about that people don't normally talk to them about. Boy, do they love you. When I sit down with celebrities who are truly smart entrepreneurs as well, and it turns out that the only thing that people ever ask them about is their, you know, nonsense celebrity stuff, blah, blah, blah. You know, and you come on with smart questions and you're interested in them as a person and what they're thinking. Oh my God, do they love you? Sarah Michelle told me multiple times that I'd asked her questions nobody had ever asked. And I'm not so genius here, but when you take people seriously and you take them on the foundation of the things that they're interested in, and man, this goes for everybody, not just celebrities, you really win them over.
Yeah. So what size shoes does she wear? Because I know you had to have asked her that, because that was nobody ever asked her that one before, of course.
I
had the same experience with Alan Alda. Once he realized that I really did want to help him with his quest, he's like, wow, what a different human being. I mean, he is passionate about what he's doing with his organization. I don't get into that right now because that'll spoil the rest of what we're talking about. But hey, go to the podcast page for Entrepreneur Weekly and just type in Alan Alda and you can listen to his whole story. It's an hour long. All right, I got to take a quick break. I want to talk to you some more. There was so much going on out there at Entrepreneur Live in LA. We're talking with the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. We're going to take a break.
From the parking lot.
That's right. See, you know, make sure if there's anybody in the dumpster to tell them to be quiet. We'll be right back.
So we figure we lay it on you, let you know.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Entrepreneur Magazine on newsstands everywhere on the worldwide interweb at entrepreneur.com. I'm Alan Taylor. Jason Pfeiffer is the editor-in-chief Right now, standing next to the dumpster in the parking lot, Entrepreneur Live going on.
Well, I got to tell you. So the Smokers Village is right next to the dumpster, but two guys showed up to smoke. So now I've moved away from the dumpster.
Oh, okay, fair enough. What we do to do our job, we are definitely entrepreneurs. We'll do whatever it takes to get the job done.
That's right.
So Entrepreneur Live is an event, everybody, that happens once a year. But Entrepreneur has other events and things it's involved with and, you know, lots of video series now. Elevator Pitch, and of course we've been doing, with Scott Duffy and I, we've been doing Business and Burgers. You guys can check that out all at entrepreneur.com. But how do people, you know, keep an eye on what's going on event-wise when it comes to entrepreneur events from our magazine?
Yeah, so we don't have a kind of published slate of events for next year yet, but if you go to Entrepreneur and sign up for our newsletter, we will certainly keep you posted on all that stuff. And, I think it's worth, and listen, I don't want to now undercut our own sales here, but, you know, hey, this isn't just a promotional show about entrepreneurs, this is about entrepreneurs.
Right.
So let me tell you this, like, you know, I think it's so valuable to come out to things like this, you know, whether it's run by us or something that you found locally or whatever the case is, because when you come out to these conferences and you talk to people and you say, what are you here for? What's the number one thing you're here for? You know what they all say? You know what they say?
What?
They say, here to meet other entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
They're here to expand their network, because that's something every entrepreneur is always in need of. Are meeting other people. And it's so funny how we come in contact with people all the time in all walks of our lives. And yet it's sometimes really hard to make that connection, to find someone who you can say, hey, we should work together. But when you go to an environment where it's all entrepreneurs, we're all here to work and to be excited about what we do, it creates a kind of environment where you can make those connections. So I would encourage people to just go out and find places where entrepreneurs are and start talking.
Totally. Well, I also find that entrepreneurs are very generous with advice. Now, the advice can only be as good as the person is in business, as you know. But, you know, it's interesting that, you know, if you ask a question to another fellow entrepreneur, they're more than willing to offer advice. And usually you'll see it comes from a place of, well, you know what? I made that mistake too. Here's what I did. When I hear that, it's because these are commonly made mistakes, and sometimes we have to make them two or three times before we learn the lesson, because we think to ourselves, nah, well, that was a coincidence. No, some of these things actually are kind of commonsensical, but, you know, we need to hear it or do it or burn ourselves in the fire a few times before we finally learn the lessons. But you're right. To be a part of a group of entrepreneurs, man, the conversations are brisk. They're very deep. You'll find out conversations happen about relationships and long and short marriages, first and second and third marriages, and, you know, why this didn't work and why I didn't take enough time with my kids or be present enough or whatever it may be. These are very valuable conversations.
Yeah. You know, Alan, it's funny. It's as if you heard my opening bit at this conference.
Really?
Because I talked all about how everybody comes from different backgrounds. They're doing different things, different levels of achievement, but there's one thing that everybody at this conference and everybody at any conference or any grouping of entrepreneurs that you find will all have in common, and that is that experience, the experience of entrepreneurship, the emotional experience. It's the same for everybody, no matter what you're running, no matter whether it's big or small, and that means that you have something in common. You have something that you can connect with, because you just got to be open about that experience and those challenges, and I'm telling you, no matter who you're talking to, you could be talking to Keith Kroc, who I just interviewed on stage, the chairman of DocuSign, or you could be talking to, you know, somebody who's just their first startup right now, and they're all feeling the same thing, and they can all connect with you over that stuff.
Well, it's all good stuff, and certainly so many of my friends who read the magazine, who subscribe to the newsletter, who spend time on Facebook and, you know, read all the amazing stories, whether it be from young folks or old folks or the mentors, the ones that have been there and done that, or the ones that are just getting there and just starting that, you know, and no matter how old you are, like for me, I'm 57 years old. I just bought a gym. I was like Nathan Latka, who's like 27 years old. He was going to go out and buy a food stand one day, and he goes, today I'm going to go buy a food stand. What do you think I should buy? Mexican food? Chinese food? It's like he didn't know. He was just going to go and make a deal. Well, I kind of did that. I bought a gym.
Yeah.
And so guess what? I'm talking to all the other guys in town that have gyms, and you know what's funny is, even though I'm their competition, they cannot resist giving me some advice. You know, sometimes you do the opposite of the advice you get, but it's like, you know, I'm just being innocent, talking to them, asking them questions. You know, I got all these extra machines. Which ones do you use most? What should I do? And it's very fun. I don't know why it is that entrepreneurs are so generous with their hearts, their business advice. They're willing to just share it. I love that about being an entrepreneur.
I'll take a stab at it. It's because they're paying it forward. Because they were in experience, they were at a time where somebody helped them, and where they were looking for guidance. Somebody stepped up. And what more satisfying thing can you have than to be the person who you once looked to? What more satisfying thing is there than to one time be someone who's just starting out and look to someone who you really admire and wish to be one day, and then become that person? And then once you become that person, man, you want to pay it forward.
It's so funny. I bought this gym, and the person at the title company, they said, I've never seen a property deal where somebody traded in a truck on a piece of property. I'm like, that's me. Of course, I made the guy buy my truck in the deal. We'll take a break. We're talking to the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, Jason Pfeiffer. This is Entrepreneur Weekly. Then I saw
her face. Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. Discover unstoppable industry influencers who celebrate disruptive thinking and game-changing business strategies on Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
And the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, Jason Pfeiffer. Jason, maybe you could talk a little bit about what's going on in the current issue of Entrepreneur Magazine.
Yeah, so if you run out to stands right now, run, run, run. Find a issue that we call 50 Most Daring Entrepreneurs. Jeff Bezos is on that cover because, man, that guy is just doing things that everyone says is insane. And then years later, it turns out that he's a genius. You know, and that's what I think is what makes a great risk taker, a great daring entrepreneur, is someone who does something that other people say, oh my God, what a risk. But you know what? Doesn't feel like a risk to the person who's doing it because they've done their homework. They've done the research. They see something that nobody else does. And we wanted to really celebrate that. And so we took a dive into 50 entrepreneurs who have done some kind of awesome, inspiring risk this year, who have taken some awesome, inspiring risk. And that's what this issue is devoted to.
Well, you should have done 51. I just bought a freaking gym and I'm fat.
It's okay.
I traded in my truck. You know what? I thought to myself, you know what? Maybe if the guy takes my truck and gives me 50 grand for my, I got this beautiful, crazy truck. And I go, you just take my truck in trade and I'll do the deal. He goes, okay. And I was like, oh no. Anyway, you know what? That's entrepreneurs, man. We throw things at the wall, and if it sticks, we go, all right, I own it. It's mine.
Yeah.
You know, God.
And you know what I wanted? I wanted to shake people out of analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
Right? Something you really got to watch out for, where you have an idea and you are just afraid to take that chance because you feel like you've got to make it perfect before you do. You feel like you got to, you know, we got to work through everything before we launch. And so it doesn't feel like a risk. And here's the thing. At some point, you just got to jump. You just got to do it. You got to say, you know what? I think I've done as much research as I can. And the only way that I will learn anymore is to throw it out there into the world and see what happens. And that's what everybody on this list does. They've jumped out. They've had some crazy idea or some not crazy idea because they've done the research. But whatever it is, they took that leap.
It's interesting. Analysis paralysis. And it's funny because my wife, she's like, hold on, let me overthink that. And we always argue, you know, it's like, I go, you're overthinking this. Let's just do it. You know, she's like, no, you know, and so we balance each other, which is great. Right.
Mm-hmm.
She slows me down. I speed her up. And in the middle, there's a few little words, but it's usually we end up laughing about it. But we've been married 31 years. So thank God we've made it this far. And there's been a few years where I didn't want to see her. Let me ask you something. So in the White House right now, I mean, we have a bit of an entrepreneur. I mean, even though he's like at the far end of the spectrum because he's a billionaire and he's an interesting fellow. But I mean, I think that the economy, the climate is really good for entrepreneurs right now. I think for the next number of years, it's going to be good. What do you think?
Yeah, the trends seem to be showing that, certainly. I mean, we have a growing economy. We have a lowering unemployment rate. And I think that what it really comes down to me, is actually not what is being done policy-wise right now. I think that what we see when we look around and we see all this entrepreneurial spirit, what we're seeing is actually a reverberation of the recession. Mm. I think that we're seeing people who learned from the recession that, oh my God, no big corporation is going to take care of me for my whole career.
Right.
No stable industry is going to hug me tight for my whole career. I got to go and I got to take care of things myself. I got to go out and have my own dream and my own vision and build upon that. And I think there's an entire generation of kids right now who grew up during that time. And you've got a lot of adults who probably lost their jobs in the recession and had to completely reinvent themselves. And I think that that takes time to really settle down into an economy. But I think that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing a great energy that came out of a grand awakening of people who said, oh, my God, got to do it myself.
I got to tell you a quick story. It's just too good not to share. So I have an 18-year-old son. He's done with school. He's taken a couple little college classes. He wants to learn some real manly trades. And I'll learn how to weld. And I'm going to learn how to weld underwater. I want to be a scuba diver. So, I mean, he bought all the scuba gear, learned, got his, you know, his certificate, went to school, learned how to weld. Now he's going to an advanced welding class. And he comes in the other day and he goes, I'm going to get a job at a coffee shop. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, you know, it's a drive-through coffee. I'm like, wait a minute. You go from all this stuff that you're learning, all these awesome trades, and he wanted to go and be, you know, my brother's a builder. He wanted to work for the builder. And all of a sudden, he's going to go work for this little lightweight job in this little place where he makes coffee and passes it out. I thought to myself, what is wrong? What happened? I was going to say, no, you can't do that. You're an entrepreneur. You don't want to work for somebody for $12 an hour or whatever. And so I thought, no, he's got to learn. He's got to go and do his thing. So he goes and he's training for this job. They're letting him work 3 hours a day. And all of a sudden, he's watching TV. And it's like he's like he took the poison pill somehow. I don't know what happened. So this went on for like, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks. And then finally, they pulled him aside and they said, you know, you're just not working out here. Everybody else in the coffee stand says you think you're better than they are. And he's like, he was like, what? I'm just trying to make coffee, you know? And so he went back and he says, if you really want the job, you got to really show me tomorrow when you come back. So he went back. He's making coffee. He makes like the first cup of coffee, the second cup of coffee. He goes up to the guy and he goes, you know what? He goes, I quit. So he comes home that night. He goes out and he buys a pickup truck for like half of what it's worth. And he comes home and he says to me, Dad, he goes, I think I can make like $4,000 on this truck. And I go, now that's why you can't make $12 an hour, because you're an entrepreneur. You're never going to be able to work for an hourly wage. You need to be able to make investments that will pay you. Anyway, Jason, we're going to be talking next to Steve Soroka from Source America. He's going to talk about getting disabled Americans back in the workforce. You're the best, brother. Thank you. Keep up the great work as the editor-in-chief.
Always good to be here with you.
All right. That's Jason Pfeiffer. Again, Entrepreneur Live going on right now. We'll be back in just a minute with Steve Soroka from Source America.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
All right, it's time to talk a little bit now about people with disabilities. I don't know if you know it or not, but 80% of Americans with disabilities are left out of today's workforce. That's more than $150 billion lost annually in potential tax revenues for the U.S. economy. So let's talk about this for a minute and how we can change things. Steve Soroka is with us. He's the president and CEO of Source America. SourceAmerica.com. First of all, Steve, I see here that you have served 6 years in the U.S. Navy as an officer. Thank you for your service.
Well, thank you, Alan. Thanks for having me today.
Yes. Now, let me ask you something here. When you talk about people with disabilities, it seems like this world, it used to be, how about this? Let me start over. It used to be that a person with a disability was somebody that, boy, almost needed, you know, like round-the-clock care. And today, a person with a disability, it can be something like even PTSD, somebody that was serving our country the way that you did and now has some issues, right? But they're still capable of doing things and maybe work from home. There's a lot of opportunities that entrepreneurs, I think this is why I want to talk about, entrepreneurs could benefit from. Maybe you can sound off.
Sure, Alan. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's 1 in 5 Americans are classified as having a disability, and that's 56 million people.
Cool.
And you hit it on the head. About 80% of those are out of work, out of the workforce. So just imagine for a moment the populations of New York and Texas. If everybody had a job in those states and all of a sudden they found themselves unemployed, we're talking 45 million people.
Yeah.
And they're a very, very misunderstood part of our economy and part of our workforce. And basically, it's the fear of the unknown. So we have to do much, much better in getting the recognition that people with disabilities can contribute to the economy and the value that they bring to the workplace.
I went to a supermarket one day, and I was standing there, I was buying my groceries, and there was a person with, I think they must have had Down syndrome or something. You know, they had kind of a certain look on their face, and you could tell that here's what happened. I got to just say this. Everyone got into a better mood around this person. It was like, as soon as I noticed that this person was bagging my stuff, I was like, oh, this person's different here for a second. I could, you know, I noticed something. Then I looked over at the cashier, and the cashier who was doing this was a lady smiling. And then when the guy, it was a young man, I don't know, he was probably in his 25, 30 years old, handed me back. He says, thank you. And I said, thank you. And I thought to myself, you know what? I like that. Because these people that have issues, whether it be somebody with Down syndrome or PTSD, which I may not be able to look in the face of the person with PTSD until they have it, but then again, maybe I do because they're looking down and they're afraid to look into your eye or whatever that thing may be. And I thought to myself as I walked out of that store, and it stuck with me, this has been like 5 years ago, I thought, I like that. So I believe that no matter what this issue could be, this disability could be, there could be a place in the workforce for these folks. Can you give me an example of maybe a work from home situation? Because a lot of folks, they go, well, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. My business, I could have people work from home. As long as they get the job done, I don't care what their issues might be, as long as they do a good job, right?
Absolutely. So let me talk about one individual out in the state of Utah who went through our Pathways to Careers program,
okay.
Ty Ross. Ty has a great story. Ty was out of the work, the education system, for about almost 5 or 6 years, left behind, unteachable, teachers just couldn't deal with him. And he had a fairly significant case of cerebral palsy.
Mm.
Fast forward, Ty goes through our Pathways program out in Utah, where we do customized employment. We match the person to a series of internships to find what they're interested in and how they can excel. And fast forward again, Ty is now part of a team working in the Department of Education in their data center as part of a software development team. And I visited them recently, and the spirit, the morale, the camaraderie that Ty has brought to that workplace is kind of immeasurable. So you're exactly right. People with disabilities are on the job. They find a way to get there when it's snowing. They stay on the job, and they can't wait to get back the next day.
A person without direction, without a purpose in life, I mean, that makes it worse. I believe that a person, when they have a purpose, they have also something called hope. And then that is the essence of life, having hope. So I wanted to shine a light on Source America for the entrepreneurs out there that listen to the show, just in case. And now they can reach out to you, sourceamerica.org. Give me just 1 minute on Source America. Tell us about it.
Sure. We're a very unique organization. We're a national nonprofit organization. We are about 400 strong. We have a national footprint in 6 regions or 6 areas of the country. And our goal is fairly simple and straightforward. We connect nonprofit organizations around the country who are affiliated with us, and there's about 450 of them, and your audience probably knows most of these, Goodwill, Easter Seals, et cetera.
Wow.
We connect those nonprofit organizations with either commercial businesses or federal customers to find meaningful job opportunities for the people we serve, people with disabilities.
Oh, it's good stuff. All right, Steve Soroka, President, CEO, SourceAmerica.org on the web. This is something we should all consider. Thank you very much for your service and your time. And for Source America, what you guys are doing. It's really good stuff.
All right. Thank you, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. We'll take a little break. That's kind of paying it forward there. Good stuff. I'll be right back. It is Entrepreneur.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, our next guest has written a book called American Fathers. And I asked him in the commercial break, I said, so why? He says, well, after 50 years of helping entrepreneurs, I kind of got tired of entrepreneurs getting beat up and getting, you know, ridiculed. And so here he is, Ron Schultz, author of American Fathers. Hi, Ron.
How you doing today, Alan?
I am doing well. I am doing well. So maybe I'll let you tell your story. A brand new book out, American Fathers. You can find it at ronschultzauthor.com or profitpicture.net. But talk about your new book, American Fathers.
Well, it is also available in any of the major distributions, Barnes & Noble or Amazon or any of the other types of places. So it is a broad availability.
Excellent.
But it's an inspirational tale. I made Asian American my hero. He's a young person that had a dream to be an entrepreneur, and just the struggles he dealt with with capitalism and raising money and the challenges and the sacrifices that he had to make, but also incorporated it with some stories about discovery that he had a biological father, which was different than his father of family of origin that he was raised with.
Yeah. What was the seed of the starting point for this book? What motivated you to it? The genesis, that's the word I was looking for.
Frankly, it was watching Congress people sit on the floor like three-year-olds and behave so childlike that I was screaming at the TV, and my wife said, you need to get control of yourself and do something. And she challenged me, and I said, I need to write a book about capitalism and about entrepreneurship, which I've spent 50 years of my career doing, and sing the praises of what it takes and let people know the sacrifices that entrepreneurs make to achieve their vision and dreams.
Mm. You know, it's not easy to put that down into a good thought. How did you do that? Did you put a special technique to the book to be able to get your points across?
Well, this is my third book, and I think you get better each time you try to do something. But
right.
What I would try to do is I worked in what I call the parable format, and I would pick two or three key issues that I wanted to try and convey in the story in each chapter. And then I would incorporate a story within that.
Tell us about what you did for 50 years. You say here, and I'm looking at a little bit about you, that this is a compilation of 50 years of you working with entrepreneurs.
Yes, I got out of undergraduate school at one of the service academies and worked for a couple of years as an engineer and realized that wasn't what I wanted to spend the rest of my life doing. Went back and got an MBA and recognized in 14 months after that I was not a corporate personality and decided to start my own business and always have had great respect and work with business owners.
What do you think about the state of entrepreneurship today?
I think it's alive and extremely robust. I'm really encouraged by the millennials. I have a millennial myself. When I started, I worked with people that came out of World War II because I figured out people older than me at the time had more money than me.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm working sometimes with the third generation. That's why we have in our company younger people that are able to actually work with a 30-year-old buying his or her first house and having their first baby. Or the gentleman I had lunch with today was with one of the 30-year-olds, and you know, he talked about not getting any sleep with a six-month-old. I can remember that, but I'm not living in it right now.
Yeah, right. What is the profit picture, and how does it work? I noticed there was a note about that as well.
I have found that most business owners are blind to what their financial statements are telling them and what some of the data is providing for them. And rather than be an actuary or a CPA or a banker or the IRS, God forbid, my partner and I sat down and said, how can we get software to speak to a system that we developed that will visually represent an issue within 10 seconds or less? So our challenge was to give the owner a visual picture of what was happening in their company within 10 seconds or less, and then be able to drill down to see where it came from and to be able to communicate it to a responsible person. So if they make a change or something's starting to run off the tracks, they don't have to wait till 3 months after the fact. They can see it 3 days after the fact.
Hmm. Tell me about the SIFT Coalition.
The SIFT Coalition is an attempt. It stands for Securing Individualism and Freedom Together. It is creating an environment where we respect one another and we try to understand why the other person has a view and really appreciate what that view is and why they look at it through their lenses, and to be able to talk out issues and obstacles. We practice that here in our company, that we have a staff meeting every week, and there's no holding bars, there's no anything, and we try to address issues that are there, and recognizing each person has unique talents they can give to help primarily have the clients have a wow experience every time they interact with us.
Hmm. Well, the human nature, complicated thing. So understanding your employees.
Yeah.
We need all the help we can get. Author of American Fathers, Ron Schultz. Again, you can find it at bookstores everywhere, ronschultzauthor.com or profitpicture.net. Ron, thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more Entrepreneur Radio.
Discover unstoppable industry influencers who celebrate disruptive thinking and game-changing business strategies on Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
One of those disruptive types is my friend Chase Jarvis from The Daily Creative. Chase is also the co-founder of Creative Live, the world's leading online education platform for creatives and entrepreneurs. You can find Chase in everything he does with over 10,000 hours of creative content at creativelive.com. So, knowing Chase, he's always got some great answer, and he does it lickety-split. So today we have Maggie. She's a photographer from Calgary, and she wants to know, why should people hire me? How do I make myself stand out in the crowd? This is from Maggie, Chase.
I love this question. I want you to feel like you're not alone, Maggie, but there's something very important that you and anyone else who's listening that has this question, you need to get really clear. If you are unsure of why someone would hire you instead of somebody else, I don't know how someone else is going to be sure of knowing why to hire you instead of someone else. So this is something I want you to get crystal clear on. You understand this? This is really important. If you can't understand why, what your differentiator, what your value proposition, to use marketing speak, is, what makes you different and or better than anybody else, you're not going to be able to put that out in the world. And if you're not putting that in the world, no one is going to understand why they should hire you instead of somebody else. So it's two things at play. One is you have to actually do the work. You have to think, sit down and think about, what am I different, better, uniquely positioned to do above and beyond or different from my peers? And if you can't answer that in one or two sentences, for example, with Creative Live, the value proposition is it's where the world's top experts teach, and we want to connect the people who care about that to the world's top experts, highest production. It's very simple. And no one else in the world offers that free access. So if you don't have that crystal clear in one or two sentences in your mind, you're not going to be able to deploy that. So first exercise is figure out what that is. And that's literally whiteboarding and thinking, sitting down, what are the things that I'm good at? Why would someone care So that's an exercise. The second exercise is the confidence to push that message. Push that message. Okay? Confidence comes from two things. Confidence comes from, first and foremost, courage to start to do something, and then to repeat that enough that you know that you are better or different or stronger or whatever the thing is that you're trying to push. You have to believe that at a cellular level. And the first one starts out, you don't believe it at a cellular level. You're scared shitless. I get it. I totally get it. But that's where you've heard 10,000 hours. That's why I'm encouraging people to be great at their craft, because you have to have that as the base thing. That's the get in the door fee. That you don't, I've used professional golf analogies before. I don't know why, but like the shittiest golfer on the professional tour is an amazing golfer. There's a get in the door fee of being great at your craft of golfing. The same thing is true if you're building a business or raising money or trying to break into the design world. It's the same equation. You have to be great at your craft. And when if you're a photographer, the settings and the camera, all that stuff, that's like, it's sort of like driving or riding a bike. That needs to be so far in the background. They're not thinking like, okay, what is F8 again? F8 is the one where the, no, that has to be in the background. That has to be like, boom. And you only get that through repetition. That in part is what breeds confidence. When you have confidence and your ability to own that value proposition of what makes you different, why you should hire me instead of somebody else, that is a deadly combination, because that's the marketing message that people who are getting hired, they've got that down like this. And not only can they sell it, they can do it in a way that's not jumping down your throat, because no one wants to buy from a snake oil salesperson. That's just not interesting. So those two things are your key. I want you to work on that. And if you, again, I'm going to emphasize that, Maggie, you're not alone. So many, even if you're thinking right now, you're like, no, I got this. You probably don't. There's a part of you that's back there going, eh, it's like the reptile brain going, I don't know. It's scary. Yep, it's scary. You know what? Big boy, big girl pants. It's time. Get over it. Great question, Maggie. Thank you very much.
Great answer, Chase. And also thanks to Maggie all the way from Calgary. If you want to ask a question to Chase Jarvis, you can call 802-962-4357. That's 802-962-4357. And we will try to answer questions for you with Chase Jarvis right here every week on Entrepreneur Weekly. Again, that's part of the Daily Creative, that he answers a lot of these questions. Again, check him out at creativelive.com. That's about it for this week on Entrepreneur Radio, Entrepreneur Weekly, Entrepreneur Magazine. Make sure you check out our website. And if you need more of this radio show, make sure you go to iTunes and click Entrepreneur Weekly. I'm Alan Taylor. We do thank you for listening. Again, go to the website, entrepreneur.com. You can watch videos and all kinds of great stories. This show is here to help you become a better entrepreneur, a better person, one and the same. I'm Alan Taylor. We'll see you next week.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.